SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, SteveBeck.com. A really pretty morning here in upstate New York, and happy to look forward to a big weekend. I can only hope that by Monday, it should be a great weekend. I can hope by Monday that things around here are closer to normal than they are right now. Right now it's like Little House on the Prairie. The only thing missing is me going out, you know, to the pump to pump water, or the outhouse. It is mayhem. There's no kitchen sink, obviously, right now. There's a chance that it might be back by tomorrow. So this stuff, you know, doesn't occur to you. You know, the dishwasher obviously is disconnected and all that. And Tina's out of town. Tina's in Rochester. She's got a math conference. So I'm left to my own devices, which is never good, but I'm washing dishes in the guest room bathtub downstairs. it's crazy. Just nuts. But I can see the transformation occurring. Listen, it's an upheaval with should be a good result. So things are a little out of whack here. That's what I'm trying to communicate. Say the least. The weekend has got just a ton of great racing, and looking forward to this afternoon. You got the Stronach Pick 5 with a $91,000 carryover. We're going to hear from Brian Nadal. Brian, of course, affiliated with a lot of our friends and neighbors, whether it's Capital OTB, Express Bet, and of course each week Brian previews the Stronach 5, but a $91,000 carryover today on a sequence that starts at Gulfstream West, I should say. Let's just go back to Calder, because that's been really easy, made it a lot easier the last couple of weeks. The Calder 6th, 352 post for the Stronach 5 today. Then the Laurel 8th and the 9th, back-to-back, 410 and 440. Golden Gate 3rd, 448. And the whole thing wraps up literally in an hour with the Gulfstream West 8th race. So GPW 6 and 8, Laurel 8 and 9, and Golden Gate 3rd. All right? And we'll have Brian walk you through, and we might slip in. Although I don't know how much more Laurel Brian does, but I do want to reiterate those two good juvenile stakes at Laurel, and really the rest of the card looks attractive. The action in New York, just day after day, as we discussed with Andy, and then another good card for Sunday. Same thing at Churchill. We'll talk to Marty. Marty'll join us after the first break. Couldn't talk to him last week, so we'll get some Churchill review in, and that'll have to include yesterday's very impressive debut. I knew while watching the feed from Churchill, and they threw it down to Ed. We'll talk to Ed DeRosa in an hour or two. We haven't been able to connect with Ed the last couple of weeks, but I knew when they threw it down to Ed yesterday, before the fifth race, these were two-year-old fillies going 5.5. And the fact that Garrett O'Rourke had made the trip over to Churchill, that spoke volumes about the prospects of the Into Mischief filly, Taraz. And she absolutely ran to the 1-2 and to Garrett making the trip to be there for a photograph. Brad Cox trains for Judmont. This is a homebred out of Silk Root, the Empire Maker mare, and obviously they were looking forward to this. She won by 7, you know, pretty much under wraps. And Florent Giroux, of course, back riding after the sternum injury that derailed his Breeders' Cup opportunity. So we'll talk to Marty, and we've got the River City. We've got a bunch of other good spots. I mean, the allowance racing in particular has been pretty amazing. Even like today, 1 3/8 on the grass, fillies and mares, 3 and ups, first level allowance, field of 12, you know, with overflow. Everywhere you look, a third level allowance going a mile on the turf as the 6th. Brad Cox looks tough. Boxwood in there, kind of a favorite of mine. There's also a good maiden bunch, 2-year-olds. These are boys, 6.5. We'll see what Marty's got to say. That's today. Tomorrow, you come right back with the River City as the feature, a field of 10, including Mr. Misunderstood and other very familiar turf types, 1 1/8, but you've got fillies and mares going the mile on the main track. You've got 2-year-olds, again, almost essentially a second division of the race today. Today it's the 8th, and tomorrow it's the 8th. So let's see, 11 tomorrow, 12 today with 4 AEs. I mean, it's crazy. Fillies and mares, 3 and ups, a mile on the turf. Field of 12 with 4 AEs and 2 MTOs. It's an embarrassment of riches. There's also a good maiden filly bunch going early on the card. That's Churchill. So Laurel, Churchill. We'll talk to Jeff Siegel later about Del Mar, the Bob Hope. The word came yesterday that Baffert, 1,000 words, will not run high velocity. He basically looked at the spot, high velocity for the Wests. There's still, you know, the Doug O'Neill pair led by Strong Constitution, and that Andrew Lerner Rager on the rail, I think is interesting. But we'll get the full Del Mar treatment from Jeff Siegel. And I'm waiting. I don't know if I heard back from Nick. I assume Nick's going to join us. If you were watching yesterday in New York, a something of a harrowing circumstance. The heel clip. There is nothing worse than the sudden, you know, the sudden drop of a horse when they clip heels. And the spot in question with Arad Ortiz, Sergeant Driver? There were two drive horses, actually. And it ended up looking a lot worse than it was, but it still does not, you know, take away from the terror of the moment. And yeah, there was Sergeant Drive and there was Monmouth Drive for Kimmel, Sergeant Drive for Rob Attriss. But Sergeant Drive, he was fine. He got up and the pony caught him. But Arad, not only does Arad get up, but he rides the 8th, comes back and wins the 8th for Chad Brown on Spirit Animal. I mean, it's amazing. Just amazing how these guys are just unafraid. Yeah. And also, we were in the ninth yesterday. I didn't even get a chance to talk about it. And Kid Chocolate ran very well, but he missed the break. He loaded first. This was annoying. He loaded first with he was the seventh, so 12-horse field. The one and the seven load together, and then the two and the eight, etc. So the one and the seven had to wait the longest. Then the four-horse of Levine's, that plebe, he pitched a fit, and he also pitched Luzzy. And so there was an extra 30, 40 seconds. Anyway, when the gate springs, the kid had his head sort of down, and he had just turned and dropped his head. So he misses the break, spots the field 10, and then came running late. But he actually, I thought it was a sneaky good effort. He came home in under 24. So I wish we could. Turf obviously is going to run out, you know, another 3 weeks. But, you know, he's coming back from throat surgery, and that was another good step forward. And ideally we get to stretch out with Kid Chocolate. And Carlisle Bell tomorrow in that seventh against Tony and Collegeville Girl. So that's our own, some of our stuff going on. Marty McGee's joining us, as I told you, and we'll talk to Hammer. We'll catch up with him in Arizona on his way, or actually I think he's already, I told you, at Oaklawn. He's at Oaklawn the next couple of days as they assign stalls for everybody. Ed DeRosa, we're going to catch up. Siegel. Scully, late in the show today. Brian Nadeau, who am I missing? Alan Foreman. Alan Foreman's going to join us this hour after Marty. And Alan's got a bunch of things to handle. And we'll bring up a few of the topics from the week with Alan. He's going to talk about that Mid-Atlantic plan to reduce fatalities. And I want to drive that home as, you know, basically a countermeasure, you know, a counterbalance to the theme that, you know, the industry's not doing anything. It's just ridiculous. I also want Alan to, you know, provide the response from his perspective regarding, you know, post-Breeders' Cup discussions. I mean, we talked plenty about it, you know, well in advance. I also, in light of what's happening in California at the CHRB, where Madeline Auerbach has retired, kind of in protest, a couple of years before her term was set to expire. Dan Ross conducted an extensive Q&A with Auerbach. And I want Alan to talk about the difficulties of balancing people with experience, people that, you know, have not just experience, but, you know, stakes in the game, serving on, you know, steering organizations and, you know, state agencies, regulatory bodies. What's the happy median here? What do you, where do you stop to keep the conflict of interest claim or concerns at bay? Because I think we all would prefer to have people that understand and have interest, a real interest in the game, making the kind of decisions on state boards, as opposed to people who, you know, their entire term essentially is spent understanding what they're involved in. I mean, I think I can put up with a little conflict of interest versus, you know, people that have no clue what they're listening to. And then beyond that, you know, people that are basically appointed at the behest of, you know, as political appointees that, you know, may be there to execute an agenda, which is, of course, the concern now with what's happening in California. So let Alan address that. And also, you know, another passing that I had not gotten to, and that was Bob Flynn. An absolute staple in New York, having worked for NYFA and NYRA and just, you know, been I don't want to say part of the furniture, but I mean, Bob Flynn was around forever, and very sad. He was a very sweet guy, and actually, I mean, not just taken too young, but also taken, you know, by a kind of a difficult illness. Very sad. So we'll have Alan and much more. Getting started with Marty McGee. Weekend preview at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Oh, God, sweet summer's gone, and on my mind she made it clear her lipstick can't be wrong. My summer, summer, my sweet summer is gone.
We're back at the races. My sweet summer is gone. Yes, summer's gone, but fall's here and winter's approaching. But in the meantime, there's still some turf racing and. Everybody putting up with the cold for now, and Marty McGee, he's ready for more action. We couldn't get to Mart last week, so we'll catch up right now. Good morning.
What's going on, Bick?
Mart!
Bick, I haven't talked to you since Johnny D was being chastised by that woman for being in her driveway in Philadelphia.
one of the funniest moments in recent memory. Yeah, yes.
You know, I've been in certain situations too. You know, you're doing a remote, you're just doing something on the phone like this, and, you know, real life intervenes, and you're trying to let them know you're on this all important radio show or whatever. And, they don't want to hear anything about it. So they just want you gone. So, yeah.
Well, you made me think of one that I hadn't thought about it at the time, but when we were leaving Pimlico after Preakness this year and, you know, came out of that little lot we're making our way down Northern Parkway, and Sirius, you know, usually calls me about an hour at one of the sports channels for a recap and a post-race conversation. And I was driving and the call comes. And there's these, they were more than police. I think they were like army people.
National Guard. Yeah.
National Guard. There you go. And the guy's like, hang up that phone. And Tina's rolls down the window. He's like, he's doing a radio thing. And he's like, the guy kind of rolled his eyes and let us go. But,
yeah, you're some big shot. This guy.
Exactly. Right.
Back when we didn't have cell phones, the racing form, we used to have to like tape these touts, you know, for lack of a better word, like 90 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever. You prepared a little script and people called in the 900 number or whatever it was. And so I was at Del Mar. I think I was on vacation. I was with my sister Amy. And so I had to go to a payphone and record this thing. Well, you know, halfway through, and you're just trying to get through the damn thing and, you know, get it all out. And, you know, I like the 837 here in race, whatever, at Arlington Park. I think it was at Arlington for the summer. And this lady, I'm on the payphone, and some lady's going, "Do you have a pen? Do you have a pen?" And she wouldn't let it go. I swear she asked me five or six times for a pen. I'm trying to get through this stupid thing I'm recording. And my sister, she heard about it. Every time she's like, I'll be in conversation, and she'll stick her head in it. "Do you have a pen?" the things we do. It's a hard life.
I love it. That now I'm going to use that too. Yeah, you can. Marty, the racing, I just am amazed every time I've been opening up overnights and then printing PPs, how many races, you know, because I basically, you know, I print out races that I think people are going to want to hear about, and, you know, then I get results and we discuss them. It's unbelievable. And this Churchill meet, much like Aqueduct, and a few other places, frankly, have really been entertaining. There's been great betting opportunities, and there's still some great racing ahead of Churchill as the meet unfolds in November with the Clark and with the Stars of Tomorrow too.
Yeah, I mean, the concentration of equine talent here right now is pretty incredible. I mean, if you think about it, everybody's kind of congregated here. and in New York as the two main outposts for where all the good horses are, unless they've left already for Florida or Fairgrounds. But from here, they're going to Florida and Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. I had a conversation yesterday with Brian Lynch. He is going to leave some horses, or he's trying to leave some horses on the Rice Road side of Keeneland for Turfway, because as you may have noticed, I think the maiden specials for Kentucky Breds are 45,000, which is way up from last year with Churchill having bought the place. And the first allowances are like 48. So, but right here, right now, is where all those horses are. They're eventually going to disperse elsewhere. But so it's made for some really remarkable racing. Yesterday we had, typically, we had some Judmont Farm Steamer come out and roll by seven lengths. This horse could be any kind. She's an intimacy filly named Taraz, T-A-R-A-Z. And she was not a well-kept secret, as she paid $3 for Brad Cox. But, again, that's just typical of the kinds of horses when, you know, say we're 2 or 3 months out from this. We're going to look back at these kind of races and say, man, there was just a wealth of talent and promise here at the Churchill Fall Meet.
Well, you know, and as you were talking, I wanted to pull up the fig, and 6.5 furlongs is always a little bit of an oddity. 71 buyer for Taraz in that debut, which feels a little light. And yes, she was under wraps. 6.5 may contribute to it too, because it's always a little bit of an oddity. That distance.
All right. You know, it's funny, Brad texted me this morning about 6:15 wanting the buyer number, because I think he's really high on this horse. And, I think we're always kind of disappointed when we see these two-year-old buyers. I mean, they've got to have some room for improvement, don't they? I mean, it won't be long until these horses are up in the 90s, et cetera. So, there's always this temptation to be disappointed, I think, when we get a buyer on a two-year-old, but just... they kind of have to be somewhat low, don't they, Bick, or not?
It depends. If you've got a heralded juvenile and it's supposed to be a coming out, you do want, I think you want a little bit of a stronger, number to move forward from. I mean, it's a respectable number, and don't forget she also won by 7 and change. So
yeah.
I'm sure that, and I'm not sure which of the buyer associates do Churchill these days, but some of it may be speculative. So when you look at what's behind and you try to figure out, and there were other, there were quite a few firsters in there, so some of that may be a little. A little mysterious. But I'm telling you, 6.5 produces goofy numbers all the time. It's a dog's breakfast of a distance.
I like that. Dog.
Mart, before we look at the weekend, some thoughts back to last week, because we didn't get a chance to talk. And I'm just looking back at the results. I had John Ortiz on to talk about Mr. Dumas, and what a nice win that is for John.
That was for Johnny. He's had, he was the one that brought around, he was the first one to have Zulu Alpha for Michael Hoy, and he won the, I think it was the Elkhorn or the Sycamore last fall, and then he really did a great job with Honey Bunny, and I wrote a little something in the, I think it's in today's form maybe, or maybe in Thursday form. Anyway, no, it was actually in Wednesday's, about how Honey Bunny was sold on a Thursday, and then on Saturday is when Johnny got his next stable star with Mr. Dumas winning. And, he's really kind of a humble young guy and very likable, and he's quickly attracting a lot of clients. I think he told me he's got about 40 horses that he's going to split up between Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. So, Joe Rocco, one of the many underrated jockeys around, gave that horse a perfect trip. If you go back and watch it, he just rode him just without flaw. And so he's to be commended for that. And, I thought you were going to ask me about Breeders' Cup, because we haven't even asked about that. And, you know, I was watching from that ground level auxiliary press area. So, you know, the day had gone great. I hadn't won, but you know, it's Breeders' Cup and everything had gone great. And then that horse broke down pretty much right in front of where we were all watching from there. And it was just like, oh my God, I just let out the loudest expletive and, just didn't even watch the rest of the race, just walked back into where we work. And it was just like, it was so deflating to have that happen. I'm sure you've talked about it ad nauseum, you know, over the last couple of weeks, but that was my own unique perspective, was watching right there on ground level. And it was near the 3/16 pole, right where the incident happened.
Now, you know, and I didn't realize actually that we hadn't had, a post cup conversation together.
Yeah, all right. I mean, it's water under the bridge.
Ask some other people today too that you know that we haven't talked to. I haven't talked to Ed DeRosa, so Ed will give his thoughts. What else, obviously, other than you know the cruel irony of literally you know 250 yards from. You know, getting finished, other, you know, beyond that, what were you struck with, Marty? What did you take away?
Well, beyond that, last night I watched the Browns-Steelers game, and it was a great game to the last. It was very comparable to the Breeders' Cup. They were right to the very end. In 8 seconds, that incident happened where the guy tore off the quarterback's helmet and hit him with it. So, to me, it was very similar to what that. We were right at the very end. Overall, it was a great day. I was happy for Cox to win with Covfefe and the Philly the day before British Idiom. I thought Kentucky was particularly well represented with Matoli and some of the other horses that ran well out of here. The week weather wise was great in California. I hope we can go back there sooner than later. And you know, we're going to Del Mar in 2021, but I just thought it was a great event until obviously, you know, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play, that kind of thing. So,
you know, speaking of which, the schedule for Breeders' Cup venues, and you had a story that is kind of directly associated with coming to Keeneland next year, and that was the decision from Watts Humphrey and Rusty Arnold. Here we thought Morticia was, we'd seen the last of her, and then suddenly there she was, and she'll be back.
Yeah, I just stumbled into that because Rusty, you know, he entered her for yesterday, Thursday, in a turf race that ended up being taken off the turf so she didn't run, but just the fact that her name was on the overnight, I thought, well, what's going on here? He had announced that after the Franklin County that she was done and she was going to be retired. But, you know, they had dabbled a little bit about running in the Breeders' Cup and they decided against it. But when her name came up, I thought, well, it's $105,000 purse. In the old days, that's like a stake, you know, if you're Kentucky bred, the purse is $105,000. And so I thought, they're just knocking out. They're going to make $60,000-something by just running her one time and taking her to the farm. But then we talk, and he said, no, we in consideration of the Breeders' Cup, you had 2 6-year-old mares win there, Blue Prize and Belvoir Bay, and Belvoir Bay barely beat Morticia in one of their meetings. And, you know, she's healthy. She's at the top of her game, obviously. And the mayor, Morticia, she's now a millionaire, and she's going to watch Humphrey's farm in Mercer County, Kentucky, for about 45 days, and then she's going to rejoin Rusty down there at Palmetto's around mid-January. So in consideration of, you know, what had happened in this prior Breeders' Cup and the fact that she will get to run on her favorite course there at Keeneland, if she makes it that far, and they liked winning at Kentucky Downs, that huge purse that she won back in September. So with all those factors in play, they said they intend to go ahead and bring her back in April at Keeneland and go from there.
Excellent. A personal favorite, and you know, that's that's a smart maneuver. Why wouldn't you? As you like to say, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? And yeah, they can play it by ear the whole way. You know, there's nothing forcing their hand if they want to end up wanting to stop on her. Of course, they probably like to breed her, you know, this year if she doesn't make it all the way through. But nobody has a crystal ball. But, yeah, they can and play it as it lays.
Well, and since you mentioned Kentucky Downs as well, Mert, the groundbreaking the progress toward the refashioned Kentucky Downs this week.
Yeah, I mean, they're spending $25 million on all that money they keep getting from the Nashville people, and they're going to I was reading that it's the largest expansion of the facility at Kentucky Downs since the track first came into existence in 1990 as the old dueling grounds. And a lot of it, though, Steve, it's not really racing-related. They're just trying to make room for more of those historical racing machines or whatever they call them, the slots like. Corey Johnson was always against me writing, "Now don't write slots like," you know. because they were still in that legal fight.
They were still fighting fighting the legal battle. Exactly.
Boy, what that's an end run to make the Hall of Fame that they made with that. I mean, it's Churchill and Keeneland and Turfway soon. And we got this new governor, though. I hope it's full boat casinos everywhere because we're so far behind everybody. You know, so all this money goes over into Indiana with the sports betting and everything. But that's another issue, Vic.
Well, and the former governor was trying to put Kentucky even further behind everybody on every level. A couple of notes about the card tomorrow, Mart. Interesting that we see Mucho coming back in here, and this, of course, was a Claiborne Dill Schneider homebred, the Blame Colt, that kind of went sideways after flashing so much ability and having been a runner-up to Mind Control in the Hopeful as a two-year-old, and it was one of that group of Bill Mott sophomores that seemed so formidable with Tacitus and the like, and here he is trying to find his way, a second-level allowance, the fifth race. There's some terrific pedigree plays or pedigree notations, including Monomoy Girl's Brother by Palace Malice, Mr. Monomoy. That's in the eighth race. There's actually some other notable pedigrees in that race as well. A lot of good racing. And then there's the Grade 3 River City as the feature.
Yeah, I really like Admission Office in there. I think he'll be the favorite, though. I think he'll be 2-1 at best. He was out of the money in the Shadwell Mile last out, as I wrote in the advance, but it was kind of a sneaky good race for him. He only got beat 3 lengths. He was 11th by 3 lengths, if you can believe that, which just tells you how well-bunched that race was and how traffic-filled it was. Brian Lynch kind of took me by surprise yesterday when speaking with confidence that this race could or will be a springboard for him to the Pegasus World Cup turf, you know, the $7 million race. And it just made me think that last year, Bricks and Mortar came into that race with kind of sublime form like this horse has. And I think next year could be a huge year for this horse, Admission Office. And Jose Ortiz makes it a point to come in to ride him. That'll add to him being the favorite. And you know, you got a trio for Maker in here in a field of 10, and you also have Mr. Misunderstood, who's looking for his first win of the year. So I think this race is definitely Admission Offices to lose. I think he's definitely the horse to beat.
What else you got for tomorrow? Anything jump off the pages?
No, you know, the way the calendar falls here, it's been kind of a quirky thing with this is the first time that Churchill's going to run through December and into December, December 1st, it's a Sunday, and again, a quirk of how the calendar falls. So there's no stake here next week. It's kind of a vacuum that we're just filling with maiden and allowance and other races. But, I mean, there's always something to bet on here, Vic. I was mad at myself yesterday for not using Vicky Oliver in the off the turf race. It seems like whenever I don't use a Humphrey horse, here they come to beat me. But I would have been alive in the pick six, but then the Elise Wood Kendall horse with first time Lasix won the last, so it was a moot point for me. But yeah, there's always stuff going on here to bet on and be interested in.
Well, and then on Sunday, too, I'll give everybody a quick glance ahead. Maiden special for the boys as the fourth race. This looks like it's got potential to be notable. And a couple of other spots, just terrific cards that keep coming. And we're looking forward to the two-year-olds down the at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, by the way, that race you refer to, the fourth race on Sunday, that's the first maiden auction race that we've ever had in the state of Kentucky, and to my knowledge. You have to have been bought for or RNA'd for $45,000 or less to be eligible for that. And didn't they start that at Saratoga or maybe Belmont within the last year or so? But
Saratoga this summer, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a way of keeping them away from the Blue Bloods and the you know, it just gives them a chance. The purse is less, if you notice. It's only $56,000 in that race versus the $95,000 that they've been running for open. But, yeah, it's a good concept that they're taking a page out of somebody else's book. But, yeah, it looks like it has a good field in there.
Just a good second-level allowance, too, as the feature. And, you know, most of these have got stake horses, you know, grade three types that are involved. Really, really strong, and looking forward toward the Thanksgiving holiday as well. Marty, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk in the coming weeks.
Happy birthday coming up to you there, buddy.
That's right. I guess we'll have to. Well, let me think. It's Wednesday, so I won't talk to you before then. Happy birthday to you.
You got it. Thank
I love
you.
It. Marty right. McGee, everybody. And my birthday is Wednesday, and Marty's is Thursday, and then Jay Pribman on the back end. All three of us within 17 days, all turning 60. Jesus, something's not right. Don't even start me on this. We're going to stay here because we got too much to do, and Alan Foreman, has got a flight that he's headed for, and I've got quite a few things to bring to Alan. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Alan, so many things over the last 2 weeks have come to the fore, and you're always invaluable for these kinds of discussions. And the CHRB activity that looks like the state is, the governor's office is conducting a coup. Some of the silly things that Senator Feinstein had to say after Breeders' Cup, including that, the industry does nothing, has no plan to address these issues. I bristled at that and referenced the Mid-Atlantic plan to reduce equine fatalities. There's so many things to bring out with you today. Start there, because I'm amazed that people can just spout off and nobody responds with the realities involved.
Well, Stephen, you know, what's frustrating to me is, in some respects, our own industry media, our own people who cover our sport, ignore some of the really terrific work that's being done because it's a positive story and it doesn't feed certain narratives. And one of those frustrations, I think, for us in the Mid-Atlantic is the work that we're doing and that we have been doing and the results that our work have produced, contrary, for example, to what's happened in California. And no criticism of California. They're doing everything that they possibly can to come to grips with this problem of the breakdowns. And nobody can fault them for their efforts. And with respect to what happened to Del Mar, what happened on Breeders' Cup Day, and certainly there'll be an investigative report that we'll all look forward to next month that'll try to answer a lot of the questions that are out there to get to the bottom of why, in particular, California, this phenomenon is happening. I can tell you the Mid-Atlantic has a different story to tell, and that's because this region, going back 7 years, 8 years, following a similar incident in New York, joined together to essentially develop a program for risk management to try to reduce fatalities. And as a region collectively, where the horses in the Mid-Atlantic are moving from state to state, how in the region with the largest concentration of racing in the United States on a daily basis can collectively work to reduce fatalities. So, let me break it down a little. Senator Feinstein can say what she wants to say, but she's not aware of the efforts that are being done in racing to reduce fatalities and the successes we're having and the challenges that we have. And that's unfortunate. And it doesn't do us all any good. Putting people on racing commissions who know nothing about our sport doesn't bring anything necessarily positive to what we're trying to accomplish. It's important to have people who understand our business, who understand the challenges of our business, who understand about the care of horses, who understand about the economics of the sport, to help us to address many of these issues. And I don't care whether it's on a state level or at the congressional level, it's absolutely essential to have people who understand the industry to be regulating the industry, both at the staff level and at the commission level. Certainly there can be conflicts of interest. They should be dealt with, and they're easy to deal with. But by and large, my own experience has been that getting experienced people on racing commissions is the best way to regulate not only our business, but I think it's that way in any industry, for that industry to be successful and to thrive. And finally, with respect to, I guess we can talk about the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan, but we are very actively working in the Mid-Atlantic region on a daily basis to address the risk that our horses face when they get on the racetrack. And we've hired Andy Belfiore, who's just dynamic and doing a fabulous job. And we are working this collectively in the region on a day-to-day basis. And we have evidence to show that this plan has worked. There are still challenges. It doesn't mean that we're going to completely eliminate fatalities. And when we have spikes and we have incidents, we carefully take a look at them to see either what we missed or what we can do better. And we move forward for the benefit of everyone. And it's a good story to tell. And I wish that we could encourage our media partners in the industry to pay a little bit more attention to some of the good stuff that's going on.
Well, Ed, you would think it would be incumbent to understand the history and be able to reference the history. You know, you bring up the 2012 spate of injuries and fatalities at Aqueduct, and there was a comprehensive task force that you were on that produced two dozen plus action plan, action list that was immediately implemented, and it has had ongoing positive impact. That's something all week that I kind of, and for 2 weeks, have tried to tie in to these discussions, Alan, and even the situation in West Virginia in recent weeks can be brought up as an example of when there's been a negative publicity crisis or black eye, or however you want to characterize what transpired with the horse, the carcass, and its disposition. Look at what positive has come out of that, given that West Virginia is going to make some sweeping changes to their, to their post-fatality examinations. I mean, West Virginia, this is a major positive coming out of that incident.
And they're making the changes because of their participation in the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan. Because all the jurisdictions, all the tracks, all the horsemen's organizations, the veterinary organizations that have signed on to and are committed to the plan are all working together to lift up those who may not be in compliance with our requirements and to ensure that everyone who is participating is compliant with what we're trying to do and is working to minimize the risk to our horses when they're on the track. You know, every time a horse steps on the track, that horse is at risk, and you can never, ever forget that. It's no different than when you get into a car and you drive on a highway. You're at risk. anytime an NFL football player goes on the field, he's at risk of serious injury. And whether it's driving a car, whether it's playing professional football, or a horse going onto a racetrack where you've got risk, we implement measures to reduce that risk and provide for a safer environment. And so everything that we're doing in the Mid-Atlantic Plain is designed to reduce the risk to the horse. And it's very multifactorial. And with respect to West Virginia, for example, one of the basic requirements, and you're going to see it going on now with Breeders' Cup, is the requirement of a necropsy when a horse breaks down and is euthanized, or a horse dies on the track or in training, a necropsy to understand not only why that horse died, but what the underlying problems were, were their contributing factors, and try to understand and put piece together the reason why that horse broke down, and to learn from it, and then to have a mortality review process with all of the essential players and investigators to find out what was known, what was not known, if something was known, why something wasn't done to identify it or to prevent it. It's exactly what's going on in the review with the Breeders' Cup Battalion. And we require that in the Mid-Atlantic, and it's an enormous educational tool. And West Virginia didn't have that process. They didn't have the money. They didn't have the personnel. And our view was that if you want to participate in the Mid-Atlantic plan, you have to get there. And so it took an incident, actually the horse lying in a landfill, and the fact that they didn't have a necropsy program. When a horse goes to necropsy, it's been disposed of after the autopsy. They didn't have it, so the horse went directly to a place of disposal. They were out of compliance, and as their commitment to the plan, they are now moving into compliance, and that's precisely what this plan is designed to do. We have that in many areas. We did a gap analysis of all the tracks in the region, all the jurisdictions. There are about 30 items on that gap list of things that tracks and jurisdictions should be doing, and we see who's doing it, who isn't, where we're weak, where we're strong, where we need to get everybody in compliance. It's a report card. And it's something that we consistently audit, and it's something that we're consistently working on.
What percentage of jurisdictions, Alan, are part of this already, and how much more can it, you know, can it spread? And maybe it would be valuable to delineate, you know, how the jurisdictions are, from a horseman's organization standpoint. I mean, we reiterate this every time, you know, you and I talk, or I talk with Eric Hamelbeck and explain the HBPA, you know, over umbrella, but explain how, and we've done this with RMTC conversations as well, but explain how concepts like this can be implemented in every jurisdiction.
Well, we have a unique situation in the Mid-Atlantic where, you know, quite frankly, it started as a very small group 25 years ago or more, mushroomed into the much larger group, beginning with the situation with the fatalities at Aqueduct back in 2011, 2012. That changed the mindset, I think, in the region. So the Mid-Atlantic is always a step ahead of everyone else. And working with Dr. Scott Palmer, we've had Tim Parkin, we've had experts working with us, and with a commitment from everyone in the region. And I'm, you know, this is THA, HBPA, every racing commission, every racetrack from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Virginia, New Jersey. We're all at the table, and it's not even a situation of being consensus-based. It's, all right, what do we have to do? What are the measures that we need to implement in order to make our environment safer and convince the public that we are concerned, that our number one priority is the health, safety, and welfare of the horse? So, you know, right now we are developing best practices that everyone will adhere to, and everyone in the region is participating in these efforts at developing the best practices. One of the most significant issues that I think we're all facing right now, and I think it's a California issue, is our racing surfaces. I mean, we have a group together just focused on the racing surfaces, working with Nick Peterson and Glenn Kozak, and we have all of our track superintendents together, and we're talking about how weather is affecting the changes to our surfaces, what happens when horses are moving from track to track at different surfaces. We're looking, we've got the racing directors together looking at training issues, at sharing lists of information about horses that are at risk, at looking at claiming practices, scheduling. You know, we've got best practices for mortality review boards, for necropsies, for everyone to have a safety compliance officer to be monitoring training and monitoring the backstretch for issues that should be reported to the stewards or the equine medical director. We have every jurisdiction requiring an equine medical director to oversee what's going on. We have a crisis communication plan, medication compliance. I mean, you go right down the list. And the beauty of this is everybody has bought into it. And so we're all pulling in one direction. Now, how do you get the rest of the country to do it? Our experience in the Mid-Atlantic is when we put programs together and then we try to take them national, they seem to get gummed up. And it's very frustrating for us. And so we try to, just out of necessity, focus on how we can make the Mid-Atlantic better and stronger. We're happy to share our best practices. We're happy to invite others in. But we don't want, when we take this beyond the region, to let this effort get compromised by those who have different ideas or want to promote different different agendas and things like that. It doesn't work for us, and it's not successful.
Well, and it, you know, you, as you talk, you made me think of something as a perfect example about trying to get out ahead of the issues and the moving targets as they are, and that is that the non-steroidals, the anti-inflammatories that you've moved to try to push back from as close to race day as possible, to push it 48 hours or even further. And here we are, a month or two after that discussion, and Dr. Parkin has got the study that that one of his graduate students put together from South American racing that is going to absolutely back up that concept of eradicating the use of non-steroidals in close proximity, Butte in particular, in proximity to race day.
Well, I'm not sure about that, Steve, and I think that our scientific experts will carefully look at that study that Dr. Parkin has referenced. The scientific research that we are basing the 48-hour non-steroidal cutoff is based on research that was very recently done. It's been ongoing for a couple of years at the University of California, and they determined that the anti-inflammatory effects, the analgesic effects of these non-steroidals, is about 30 hours. So we've gone out to 48 hours. So I think that 7 days is drastic. What Dr. Parkin is saying, though, and I think we can all agree to, is that horses that are being treated with phenylbutazone are at risk. I don't think anybody would argue that. That if there's a reason to give phenylbutazone to a horse, then that horse is at risk. That doesn't mean the horse is at high risk. That doesn't mean the horse is prone to breakdown. It's just a risk factor. And we, in fact, if you look back at our 2012 analysis of the aqueduct situation, there are a number of risk factors that you look at. Some are higher priority than others, but it deserves to be considered as a risk factor. I think that backing out the 48 hours, the purpose of this is not because somehow what we're doing now has a negative effect on the horse. What it does is it compromises the ability of the pre-race veterinarian's examination, that veterinarian to comfortably determine that that horse is suffering from some kind of lameness. And so that's the reason for backing off to 48 hours. We think it will improve the quality of the pre-race examinations.
It is, and on that topic, got a couple of things before we go. That kind of circles around to Breeders' Cup. What were your thoughts, Alan, as to as to what not just what transpired, but more even the aftermath, and what message should the industry try to coalesce when, you know, we had as much supervision as has ever been, you know, conducted, that a horse still gets through the safety net and goes wrong. What do we say?
Well, I was stunned. Who wasn't stunned? I was greatly disheartened, as we all were. And there had been a lot of talk over the 2 days about the racing surface itself. So I began to wonder whether or not it was a racing surfaces issue. And then this video appeared that seemed to show that the horse was laying 48 hours out. I can only say two things. Number one, that's the reason why you have a necropsy. It's the reason why you have a mortality review process. And the reason why you have an investigation to get to the bottom of what happened. And we can all speculate. And I think speculation probably is unfair at this point until Dr. Bramwich completes his report. And I'm hoping it will be comprehensive. I'm hoping that it will be very direct, not subtle, but very direct, and tell it like it is. And, you know, if you know me, Steve, I've always been one who is a tell-it-like-it-is guy. I mean, I believe in transparency, and I think that when we did the analysis of the fatalities at Aqueduct, we told it like it is. We didn't leave a stone unturned, and we didn't hide behind anything. We put out 21 autopsies. We were very direct about what we thought happened, what didn't happen, and what needed to be done to make things better. So I think that there'll be repercussions, I'm sure, depending upon what Dr. Bramwich concludes. But I think that, you know, his investigation will tell us the story of what happened and where there was a failure. And I suspect it'll be multifactorial. It always is.
It always is. Exactly. That's well put. Two more follow-ups, Alan, before I let you get on a plane. Bob Flynn, really, really sad. And you knew him so well.
Well, it was a New York racing lost two of its greatest gentlemen in the past year, Rick Violette and now Bob Flynn, both of who worked together and worked with me for so many years. Bob Flynn was beloved at NYRA. When he worked at NYRA, he came to work for the Horsemen back when Al Freed was president of what was then the New York HBPA. That's when I met and started working with Bob. Bob was instrumental in the formation of the THA. Bob was my friend. He was my confidant. He was a consummate gentleman, polite, always wore a suit, never raised his voice, was a very effective voice for horsemen, particularly backstretch workers and the needs of the backstretch workers. He was a beloved guy, and he did a great job. And about 14, 15 years ago, Bob was diagnosed with a very rare dementia-related disease that forced him to retire, and it's been very sad since that time. And when Bob left, and I personally have missed him since he was diagnosed, and there's nothing you can say. You'll never find a person who will have a negative thing to say about Bob Flynn. He's a gentle giant.
Finally, any updates regarding the Pimlico plant?
It's moving forward, Steve. We are now meeting with legislators, with community groups, with I think we've done our media tour, I hope. But the good news is that our legislature goes into session on January 1, and that bill will be introduced when the session opens. We're developing the legislation right now. It's a very challenging piece of legislation because we do not have a model to copy. We are basically inventing the wheel and creating two tax-exempt authorities that will receive the land from the Stronach family and will allow us to sell bonds in the marketplace. But all indications are that this bill is going to go forward, and we're hearing that the bill will be introduced early, and we can expect the bill to move quickly. So if we don't hit any big bumps in the road, I'm optimistic that we can get this done early in the legislative session that would allow then for us to get moving on getting into the bond market, getting the stadium authority, involved in procurement, perhaps starting the Laurel Barn area, and we can kind of accelerate the timeline if, in fact, this thing gets done quickly.
Sounds great.
We're not getting the sense that there's a lot of opposition, so I think it's going to get done.
Outstanding. Boy, I love it. Alan, I can't thank you enough, as always. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Steve. You know, anytime. Best to
Alan,
have a happy holiday season.
I appreciate it. Alan Foreman, and best wishes to Alan and his family. And, of course, if you haven't been, I'm going to send out the link and specifically the PDF of the Mid-Atlantic plan to reduce equine fatalities so that everybody understands, you know, what has gone into this and the areas that are, you know, that are part of the work. I mean, I think if you've never heard Alan, and who hasn't heard Alan? I mean, everybody's heard Alan, right? I think, right, at this point, if you listen to the show regularly. But tharacing.com for the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association and, you know, its members. And I'll send out that link. And of course, Tom Lamara does a tremendous job administering for the THA. Let's take a break. Hour one in the books, and we'll come back. Brian Nadeau. A Brian Nadeau visit, which I'm excited about. And we're going to look at that Stronach 5 with Brian. And then Hammer and Ed DeRosa, Jeff Siegel, James Scully. A lot of handicapping to come. And more horse talk. Back after this, Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.